Intervju Radija Študent. V okviru festivala Literodrom, ki je letos pokrival nemško govoriče področje, smo se pogovarjali z Robertom Proserjem, avstrijskim pesnikom in kuratorjem pesniške platforme Babel Sprech, ter Nikolo Richter, nemško urednico digitalne založbe Mikrotekst. Govorili smo o načinih njunega dela, selekciji objavljenih tekstov, grafitih, zanimivih avtorjih, spam poeziji in prihodnosti digitalne založbe in tako dalje. Najprej pa smo obema zastavili vprašanje, kako sploh dojemata nemško in avstrijsko literaturo.
I would say there's a difference between the Austrian scene and the German one. And like one is that in Germany it's much more professional, which has like his positive sides and also his negative sides. So like I think one negative aspect is that it's quite It's so professional that it's like very, very strict. Mm-hmm. It's a strict distinction between poetry and prose, which you won't find in Austria, which is like, I think it's like also like a main difference that like in Austria, you, it's more, I mean, all the younger, especially the younger poets, you know, are dealing like with different aspects of literature or of art, you know, they're mixing with music and with paintings and theater, so it's somehow it's very light, very vivid.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening a lot, but also it's not very focused, like that kind of a big scene like in Germany, mm-hmm. which also in Germany has like this. I think it's very also like as a positive aspect is very very powerful. You know, they are like, mm-hmm. very good connected and like working on the text. It's like a high quality standard as well.
So you don't think there's a common topic in the new generation of writers?
No, I think so far it was the common topic was that there was no or maybe nearly no dealings with or in with politics or like especially I think it was very unpolitical the writing the poetry mm-hmm. and now I guess or I would say that it's like changing. I know it from a few poets. It doesn't matter if they are Austrians or Germans or Swiss, who are like starting now to work or to write about politics. So not like political writing, but you know, like dealing with current circumstances.
So the same question for you.
Yeah, I think it's actually a very difficult question because the literary scene is so diverse, and of course you can make distinctions between people who rather write poetry. They are organized in certain with certain institutions and events, and you have the prose people and also the dramatic, like drama writing people. What I know from the poetry scene is that I think in at least in Berlin where I live, it's very much organized in groups. And it was already in my generation. I'm now nearly 40, so I also was organized in these poetry circles. And out Daniela Seel yesterday explained also that her publishing house kind of started off as an offspring from this poetry circle. When I was in my like 20s, 30s, there were about four big poetry circles in Berlin, and of course all these poets are still connected. And I know that the relation to an older generation of poetry is actually very much a personal one, often an admirational one. I know that some like Elke Erb or Thomas Kling, who is dead now, and also Gerhard Falkner, some poets that are older now, they have personal relationships to younger poets, and there is also, I think, the younger generation, they read their works now, maybe with their new eyes that they have. About the topics, I think the variety of poetry that is written is very wide. So if we stay in this poetry area, that's my impression at least. You find people who write more experimental poetry, or right. Then you have some who write nature poetry, you have like open mic poetry, slam poetry, you have all sorts of things. Maybe this is something new for the younger generation, that it's more diverse. Might be, but probably not. So I think the literary scene has always been, especially the poetry scene, a very aesthetically broad one. My work for Mikrotekst, this digital publishing house, is not really something where I publish people that come to me. This happens, people send me their works. It's more that I actually approach writers because I'm interested in certain topics and I'm interested in certain ways of writing. And I really like the way of writing, and I think it is very relevant, which is engaging with a contemporary situation, political or situation in society, and which is then dealing with this in a literary way. It can be a literary reportage, it can be a collection of Facebook posts, it can be short prose, it can be Facebook posts that have been elaborated to short stories. Mm-hmm. I'm very open, I publish tweets, so I'm not really waiting for the motivation of the writer. Of course, when I talk when I talk to writers, then I never made the experience that someone said to me, no, I don't want to do it. You know, this is also something I was asked a lot in interviews in Germany. Mm-hmm. When I started with a digital publishing project. They said, but, you know, it's so unrealistic. No writer wants to have an ebook. They all want to have this physical book and they want to show it around and they like the smell of it and all this. I hate this smell argument, actually, because do you really buy a book because you want to smell it? Mm. Anyways, I had never had any writer who said, I don't want to be published as an ebook. So the thing is that the writers that I approach probably are already open-minded to digital. They are open-minded to new things. This is why, of course, I only have positive experience because I choose the writers I want to work with anyways. So I assume there is some open-mindedness in that respect.
You said they published also tweets and everything. How do you feel about comments, like under texts on the forums?
I think people, writers who are writing on the web, have a totally different relation to the readership than a writer who is publishing a book. Because when they are writing on the web, they have instant feedback, be it likes or comments or retweets or whatever. So they know their audience. And for example, Asaf Alasaf, a Syrian writer published with Mikrotext just recently, he has started Facebook stories. He wrote little entries every day about a character called Abu Jürgen, who is a German, fictive German ambassador in Beirut. And he gives himself a character, Abu Rita, and Abu Rita and this. So the Syrian refugee and the German ambassador start this imaginary friendship. And his readers on Facebook, his followers, liked this character so much, they started inquiring about this character. And they said, I want to have more of this character. Where is Abu Jürgen? What happened to the friendship? How does it continue? So in the end, it was like a sequel novel developing on Facebook by incident. And I think this is something very important when you talk about commentary. Mm-hmm. They influence the way how something is developed. So they are not actually part of the factual text in the end, but they influence via dialogic processes what is happening. Also, I once did a project with a philosopher, Jan Kuhlbrot, and a poet from Leipzig. He wrote for 7 days on his blog 7 thesis about creation, like, you know, the creation was for 7 days, and we had this project for 7 days, and we invited everybody to comment. And so his thinking developed using these comments by other people, and then for the ebook we also published the most interesting comments. So you can enter while reading this ebook. It's called Das Elster Experiment, the Magpie Experiment, and you can then enter a philosophical thought process of one writer with his commentators. Mm-hmm. So I think you can do a lot of things with this. This is just 2 examples.
I wanted to ask you especially because you are an editor and a writer. So you have these 2 positions. So how they collide, or do you like separate this when you do you approach it as a writer or as only an editor or both at the same time?
As a first person, I'm always like the writer. And maybe I'm not seeing myself maybe like as an editor, more like a multiplicator or something. You know, like I can in Austria or like in the poetry scenes together with other ones, or like with Max Jolik and Michael Fehrmay, co-creators from Babelsprech, we are able like to, or we are able to build up like a network, and it's like an invitation like to younger poets like to enter this network. And also now it's working if someone wants to do something by his own, make like a festival or something like this, you know, like a meeting or readings or performances, we can offer like the contacts, also like or the whole network, and also like the a bit of marketing and stuff like this. So I see it's more like from writers for writers, like a helpful instrument which you can use.
You wanted also to...
Yeah, I want to say something regarding the relation to the writers, because I also come from this writer perspective, and I found it always very... maybe boring that a manuscript often has to wait a long time until it is published. And I think the great advantage of digital publishing is that you can really work with a writer on a topic, on a text, and you publish it like 1 month later. So it's very fresh and it's very close to what the writer has actually worked upon. And it's not like this that you have to send in your manuscript, it lies there for half a year, then it's edited, then it waits again, and then it will be published in 2 years' time when the writer actually is already writing something totally different. So I always say ebook publishing is much more a writer-friendly, publishing way of publishing.
So what do you consider unpublishable?
I consider lots of things unpublishable, but it's just my taste, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I don't like it if it's cheesy, I don't like it if it's sexist. I also in the beginning I got lots of weird like nearly porn like diaries. I get all sorts of weird things, science fiction, which is not understandable because it's written without any syntax, and with so people send to me all kinds of things, and I'm reading them and I'm answering all people. Sometimes I make friends with these people. For example, like lately some students sent me some strange translations from French. I cannot publish this, but I found the whole concept quite interesting, and now we are kind of we met and we are meeting again, and we are now in some sort of deep intellectual exchange, and we don't know where this might happen, where this might lead. But usually I publish I don't publish all. Yeah, I think it's more interesting to define what you would publish then, because there are so much publishing houses for all sorts of things.
Can you talk maybe about this book that I'm interested in, Spam Poetry? How did you find this author? How did you get in touch with him?
Yeah,
what's it about, actually?
Yeah, Spam Poetry is written by a writer based in Munich, Thomas Palzer, and he actually sent in an essay to me, and I liked his way of writing, but I was not so interested in the topic of the essay, and then I read his biography. And I saw that he had done a radio play with a very important techno DJ, and it was about spam poetry. So I just thought, well, I actually have not read any spam poetry published, a German, and so I asked him if he could send me the manuscript of the radio play, and because I thought it must be there and he has the rights, and so I liked it, and we added more to this book. It is now much longer. He collected new spam, and this is actually a book which is basically written by bots, because spam is language gathered in a quite intelligent way by bots, but somebody has also written this program, so it's a like double writing process. Then also these spam poetry texts, they have a certain goal. They are very much, they want to sell something, and they are very exaggerative, and they are very expressionist, and they are also sometimes very very stupid. And this is why then Thomas Palzer said actually it's a way of new automatic writing, you know, in the futuristic the tradition poetry could also seen in this automatic like écriture automatique. And she says it's a new way of écriture automatique, and he put all these spam things that he found interesting in eight chapters, and they all deal with one topic. And I think it's such a funny book because it all these texts want to make your life better. They want to make you look nicer. They want to sell you a nice watch. They want to make your sex life better because they have a really great medicine. They want to make you richer. So it's a book that really enhances your spirit when you read it, because you really, I can get better in all aspects of my life.
It's a very motivational book.
Very. Yeah.
Did you read it?
No, not yet. But now it's not for me.
Yes,
I will read it.
And I wanted to ask you, because you were a graffiti artist, no?
Yeah.
And when does actually literature become as subversive as graffiti?
Yeah, I mean, in the moment, actually, like in the moment when you speak it out loud, I think, you know, it has like the same energy, I guess. You know, so like your voice, I'm not making like a big distinction between like prose and poetry. I mean, for me, it's like it's poetry. You know, when you are really in a conscious way, are working with language. You know, when you try to give it like a very stylistic and formal individualistic shape. You know, when it's really your own and coming from you. And then I think it's also like it's not just the writing. It's also like the performance or the reading, the speaking. It's the same important act like in the whole process of. Writing, you know, and like in this moment when you I don't know when you're like on stage or somewhere else, but when you speak out loud, I think it has like for me it's like the same energy like back in the days with graffiti or with spraying, also like this, you do it like in the moment and you know like this rush, this adrenaline, and then it bam, it's like on
and then it's gone, no? Like yeah. A good, like you could say, a good graffiti.
Yeah, I mean,
that speaks the truth is erased. Yeah, in,
exactly.
In this, like,
yeah, I mean, it happens to you that it won't stay long. You know, actually, like the voice, you're right. Yeah, it's like this moment of speaking, and then it's
gone, past, and it's. Yeah.
But it's a very, very, you know, a very energetic movement. Like I see it, like in both in literature and also like in graffiti. And in graffiti, I mean, it was like my introduction into art itself, and also like into a different kind of thinking. You know, like how do I see the world, or how can I use it for my art, or how can I implant my art into this surrounding, into this world? So it's like for me, it was like I learned a lot through graffiti.
And how do you feel about? Do you maybe know this from the series Homeland, when they ask this artist to put graffiti in Arabic, and they wrote like Homeland is racist, and the producers didn't know. How do you feel about this?
I think that's like a good way to use graffiti, or like also like writing. I mean, it's like the writing act.
I think this is a good example how you can be subversive by using structures that are already there. Yeah, I mean, graffiti is also using a wall that is already there.
Yeah, and then actually, you're like entering
exactly.
a system.
If I may draw a conclusion to digital publishing, it's a structure that not imitates the book publishing, but it's a structure that somehow enters book publishing, because suddenly we are competing for the space of reviews, printed magazines and newspapers. Suddenly we are, now I'm organizing with some other people an electric book fair, because the book fairs, the traditional ones, are a bit difficult to enter, because we cannot show so much, so we need to do a different system. But still you run along the existing system, and you can, I wouldn't say attack it, but you are very free in installing new structures that run along these existing structures, and that is something which is already so.
And you really need to invade like this
exactly.
the structures or the system. I mean, like also like in the German speaking like Feuilleton, you know, it's really annoying, because there's like one bestseller, and you know you have it like in every newspaper and in every magazine, and you know it's just a lot of space which you could use actually not only like for ebooks, but also like for poetry,
exactly.
You know, or like all the underground literature, like from small independent publishing houses.
Yeah, the horrible thing about this mainstream review system is that it is not important anymore if the newspaper is more conservative or if it's more left-wing. They still talk about the same books. And I find it so boring, because if I read a more conservative newspaper, I hope they will present to me some more conservative, or maybe some very opposite, to say how bad it is. I don't know, but I think they could use their publishing attitude to help other published attitudes.
Yo.
And this is not happening if you just jump on the same train, you know.
And you, Nicola, I just wanted to go back that you mentioned yesterday that you got like almost only male like writers writing you. Can you maybe mention some of the female writers that you already published and what kind of work?
Yeah, I published, for example, a horror story by Sarah Kahn. She is she was famous for her stories of Berlin. Her is called Ghosts of Berlin. This was published with Surkamp. She's also now writing her next book for Surkamp, a big German publishing house. And I met her by chance, and she is very open-minded. She said, if you want to do something with me, just tell me. I said, yeah, can you write something for me? Anything you like. And we talked about all her ideas, and I published a horror story, which is some sort of parody of Amazon. And all the, because it's about this horror mushroom, and it's a mushroom that invades all our worlds and the books and destroys everything. And once you have read the book, it will destroy itself, not really, but you are not allowed to talk about it. It's actually also a story which we say it's an unsatisfied story. It's actually very, very funny, very, very dramatic, and it's like a horror story in the horror tradition. So Sarah Kahn, I published an English writer, Chloe Siegen. She lives in Berlin, and she wrote stories in English. They are actually free to get online, also as PDF. So if someone doesn't know how to read an EPUB, there's PDF. You can just download it from the Mikrotext site. It's great stories, like punk stories of coming out on Facebook and parties in Berlin, and sort of change of perspective, power play. What else? Now a Syrian writer will be published, Rasha Abbas. It's already in preparation. I published actually, yeah, some more. I feel like, I know that the majority was male, but I try to really find an equilibrium. I published actually one very great Austrian writer, Stefanie Sargnagel, who is like the shooting star at the moment of the German-speaking scene. She is published actually in book format in a small publishing house in Vienna, Redelsteiner Edition.
Genau.
And she's just published her second book. And between those two books, the printed books, I published an ebook with her. And
Do you see like a different perspective in the writings of females?
No. In a way, how you convey multiple perspectives to readers, it's very important to have a gender mix, but also to have a nationality mix, to have an age mix. I publish young and older writers. Like one of the people published was Alexander Kluge. He's now over 80 years old. I think variety is the goal, and I wouldn't really want to make this gender debate like the core thing, but of course it's important. But you know, I also published a Ugandan guy, an activist who's activist for the lesbian queer rights. I'm actually more thinking about the text if I like it. Yeah, but like we yesterday discussed, of course it's also important to have a clear mindset about the prefabricated motives you have, and maybe to question them in sometimes.
You with the publish, but you held also symposiums now. This project. Could you talk about that, especially this one of the European Spring, about this topic? How do you select the people who are involved in it?
It's like a one main part of Barbesprech is like the meetings, the big symposiums, where let's say it's like between 20 and 30 participants, like from so far from Austria, Germany, Switzerland, Liechtenstein, and South Tyrol. And we, at the beginning, it was like one of the, it was an equal part, like to the website and also to the publishing of the anthology, Lyrik von jetzt 3. But then during the course of the last 2 years, we saw that actually like this thing, like these gatherings, are the real thing. Now we learned like over these 2 years, and now we keep it very open. So we meet at the beginning all together, and then we say, okay, now we're offering like the room and like the logistics. Let's build workshop groups. Mm-hmm. What do you want to work on? You know, it's like we're really now at the beginning we had like a fixed program. Also with like speakers like Anja Utler, for example, a very very good poet from Germany. But now we say okay, mainly we are skipping now the speakers, and they're really like asking the poets itself what you want to do. We are just offering like the surroundings, and that's working great, maybe it's like a workshop for the text, or they are trying to find, write like a collective text, like mm-hmm. together, like one big poem. You need, that's it, you need to find mm-hmm. the people and bring them together. Now I can observe, you know, that like the Austrian poets are getting invited to reading series like in Munich or in Zurich mm. or somewhere else, and also like vice versa. So like the Germans or Swiss are coming to Austria. Me, as the Austrian curator, I'm always trying to mix, to get like everyone. Or, you know, I'm open if I discover someone, or if someone is telling me, hey, look at this one or her. Yeah, now we are now working on it to enter with Babelsprecher second phase, which will be like an international one. And now we are preparing like the formula for to get like the fundings. If it gets through, we will start like on an international level.
How does actually the elderly generation perceive digital publishing?
The readership is there, but it is quite small, because the texts that I'm producing are usually texts that are read by the traditional literature interested mm-hmm. readers, and they are very fascinated with paper books. So I actually feel like a missionary, and I am happy about every new convert I have for the digital reading. I actually have many readers that read their first ebook with a microtext ebook, and I just converted someone the other week, a blogger, and she was writing a long blog post about one of the ebooks and saying, actually, I have never thought good about digital publishing, but this book is only available digitally, so I had to buy it. It's actually a collection of texts on the refugee crisis, mm-hmm. and it's personal stories about migration stories of their own family, of people helping in refugee centers and so forth. And I think that is my goal to convince the readers that it might be something they can include in their lives. I don't think they should stop reading books, like printed books, but as we are all in situations where we stare constantly on our smartphones, checking the social media where nothing is happening, nothing substantial, why not download an ebook and open it? And all microtext ebooks are actually episodic. So you can actually really, really in a simple way dive into them and get out and start again without feeling you are confused and you have to start all over, like it all happens with novels when you've forgotten who's this character, who's that, what happened. So it's episodic reading for like these phases where we just check our streams, and I really wish that people can find that fruitful for their minds to use the smartphone as a reading device. Yeah, the numbers of e-readers, like people reading e-books.
You have the, like a statistic of how...
Yeah, we have lots of statistics in Germany, and the assumption was for a long time that especially older women are reading e-books, which now has changed a bit because it is now more male people, because now more people read on smartphones. Before, they read on these e-readers with e-ink. And of course, it is very good for people who actually consume a lot of books, like entertaining books, books you only read one time, and then, you know, what do you do with them? So with an e-reader, you don't have so much waste. You buy it. It's cheaper, mm-hmm. actually, each copy. But now, I think as a smartphone is really taking over, as a little computer we carry with us, yeah, I have numbers that 25% of all smartphone users in Germany read ebooks. And this is a much higher number than the people who buy ebooks. There's a big gap. So the assumption is that lots of people download ebooks, like pirated ebooks, pirated stuff, or they download PDFs. And that, but it's something which is, I think, a very good development, that actually this gadget, which is a phone which can do so many things, is also started, is now like used as a reading device.
Gosta je intervjuvala Andreja Štepec. Intervju Radija Študent.